The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Brewers Podcast Emergency Edition. We have to talk about the NL tiebreaker game on Monday. I know we just spoke to you, just talked with Tom Hodricourt and Todd Rosiak on Sunday night, brought it to you Sunday night, Monday morning to talk about the Brewers postseason picture. We now know that the Milwaukee Brewers are the 2018 Central Division champion. They won 96 games, which is tied for the most in franchise history. It is indeed a magical year, and the Brewers now wait until Thursday to begin the National League Division Series. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Journal Sentinel Brewers podcast. We're giving Tom and Todd a breather on this one. They've been doing a ton of work, by the way, all that at jsonline.com. You can read all about it. And I'm bringing in my special friend, Kurt Hoag, my colleague with the Journal Sentinel. Hello, Kurt.
Hello, J.R. How are you?
I'm quite good. How are you, Kurt?
I'm doing well, pretty well.
I know. Because it's a good time to be, you know, in the Milwaukee market. The Brewers are going to the NLDS as we record this on Tuesday. We don't know if it's the Cubs or the Rockies that they will be playing. We got to talk about that game at Wrigley Field on Monday. We're also going to go through our favorite moments of the season. We are going to draft our favorite moments of the season. I think we'll each do a starting nine. We'll go back and forth and draft what we consider to be the biggest moments of this 2018 season. There are, spoiler alert, a ton of moments, Kurt. How much are we going to leave off our list?
Oh, man,
should
make
a list.
We're going to leave off some good moments.
Yeah.
It might make some people angry.
You think? You think people will be upset about this?
This is something people should and would get upset about.
Yeah. Well, I'm early apologies to G-Man Choi because I'm not sure he's going to make our list, despite being absolutely fantastic
old
as
friend.
A human. Yes, old
love
friend
him.
G-Man Choi.
Love him very much.
We do. He had some big hits.
He needs to get a world. He'll get a World Series ring, right? If they win the whole thing.
I don't know how the rings work.
Like, does Jonathan Villar get one?
I don't know. Of course he has to, right? But like, I don't know
how
that works.
Do you have to meet a certain war threshold?
I don't think so. I'm pretty sure the war threshold doesn't matter. I'm pretty sure you can be in the negatives. But like, Nick Franklin gets one at bat. Does he get a ring?
I don't know, man.
Do they get a share? Like, the shares get voted on, so there are some people who won't get shares. But I don't know about the rings, man. That's a good question. We're going to look into that. That's hard-hitting stuff that we need to know the answer to. We want to go over this game, like I said, talk a little bit about the postseason roster, the postseason ahead. Like we said, right now it's Tuesday. We don't know for sure if it's going to be Cubs or Rockies. Which would you rather see? Because I have an answer to this question. Do you have a preference, Cubs or Rockies?
I think the Brewers have shown that they match up pretty well with the Cubs over the last month. They're definitely not afraid to play them. I think they almost look forward to it in a very unique way. They also beat the Rockies pretty well this year, but I mean, I'm really not going to overreact to a seven-game sample size, although I guess I'm doing that with what the Brewers did to the Cubs recently. So,
right.
So hypocrisy for me. So I'm just going to say the Rockies because I really just don't want to see the Cubs again. I just kind of want to be done with that.
Yeah, well, I mean, I agree with you. They matched up well with the Cubs and shown they can win at Wrigley specifically,
right.
Three of the last four. But,
and that's tough to do.
But you know that Cubs fans, I mean, Brewers fans who have tickets to Game 1 and Game 2 of the NLDS, like, it's just human nature at this point. They're going to sell those tickets for double the value to Cubs fans.
Oh, sir. Oh, yeah. The StubHub price will just skyrocket if it's the Cubs.
Right. And we did just see this game Monday, and one of the biggest stories was the number of Brewers fans, the volume of Brewers fans at Wrigley Field. But that's really born of a specific scenario where a game isn't for sure to happen until less than 24 hours beforehand. Everybody had the same shot at those tickets. It wasn't about season ticket packages or anything. Everybody could get their hands on tickets. So you had Brewers fans treating it like a mini, like, work getaway all of a sudden, and they were able to get there in mass and not so much for just as well as Chicago fans could get there. In this case, with premeditation involved, I think you're going to see a ton of Chicago fans pouring in. I think it's going to be a really tough scene if the Cubs are at Miller Park. Just from a pure psychological standpoint, that's just not something I personally would want to endure. I would love it if the Rockies are that opponent as a result. But the Rockies are dangerous, too. They rocked, 8-9 to close the season or something, just like the Brewers have done. So that's not a great matchup by any means.
Yeah, you're not going to get an easy team at this point. So, yeah.
Let's talk about the game in Wrigley Field. Brewers win 3-1. You know that by now. The Brewers were tied. Anthony Rizzo's home run tied the game against Yuli Chacin. It was the only hit Chacin gave up in 5 2/3 innings. The Brewers then tacked on a couple runs late. Big hits by Lorenzo Cain.
The MVP.
Kurt's MVP, Lorenzo Cain. Ryan Braun also with a big hit to go up 3-1. Josh Hader retires the last six batters, or gets the last six outs of the game, giving the Brewers a sweet, sweet victory at Wrigley Field with tons of Brewers fans looking on. The actual MVP, Christian Yelich, had three hits in the game. As I'm watching him, we've talked, I think, a little bit about his ability to hit ground balls. He just hits a ton of ground balls.
He does hit a lot of ground balls. balls, and he hits them hard.
I know, and that's why he's able to get on base as much as he does, because he's got this outrageous ability to turn ground balls into hits more than the average person.
And the key with him is he's so efficient with his fly balls as well and his line drives. If he's hitting those, he's squaring them up most of the time, and they're either leaving the yard or finding a gap or getting down in front of an outfielder. So
I watched him yesterday, his third hit where he went opposite field, really three ground balls to three different parts of the infield. You know, one was a slow chopper. And again, his speed works to his advantage. Guys with high BABIP, the first question you ask is, well, is he really fast? Is he like Billy Hamilton turning routine ground balls into hits? And Yelich isn't that fast, but he's very fast. And then you had one kind of up the middle that was good for an RBI. And then one opposite field to lead off an inning. That was Ichiro to me. We've been talking about Barry Bonds, but like that's like Warlock type ability to put the ball exactly where he wants to.
And in 2018, where everyone gets you'll be shifted if you have any sort of numerical significance in your spray chart. You know, if you're hitting the ball 60% of the time to the right side, you're going to get three infielders on that side. But it's just tough to shift him, and so he hits that RBI single right up the middle, and then he slaps one to left right by the third baseman. It's just that helps his ability for his ground balls to turn into hits, because you can't – it's not like it's Eric Thames or Matt Carpenter where you know where their ground balls are going. He hits them everywhere.
And Ichiro Suzuki, I think, is a really good comparison.
That
a future
is a
Hall of Famer.
Yes.
And I've seen Ichiro take batting practice at Miller Park where he parks like seven in a row. And everyone will tell you, oh, man, if he wanted to hit for power, he could. Which I always thought was a little weird. Like, if he wanted to hit for power, hit for power. So what we're seeing from Yelich is a guy who can put ground balls essentially slow pitch softball style. Wherever he wants to put the ball, he's doing it. And also, he's hitting enough home runs to be just one or two. It ended up being two back of the National League leader. I mean, he is doing what Ichiro would have done if anyone had said, you know, Ichiro, you can hit for power also. So, obviously, this has been a special second half of the season. He's going to win the National League MVP award. I don't think it'll be unanimous because I think some votes will go toward Jacob DeGrom.
Yes, DeGrom is kind of sneaking up on Baez as the number two guy.
I think we're going to see that. I think DeGrom ends up number two.
Especially because the Brewers now won the division, so there are some voters that's their narrative. The best team, best player, the best team, yes.
Now it's Yelich. I completely agree with that. I think the last votes, and I don't believe votes had to be in until after the 163 games yesterday. I believe that Javier Baez may have lost his last outpost of votes with the Cubs going down here.
Joaquin Soria took care of that.
Joaquin Soria took care of that. And, I mean, obviously, these last couple weeks can't really tell the whole story of the season. But Baez has not come through in big situations, whereas Christian Yelich has over and over again. So yesterday's game was definitely about Yelich. It was definitely about Lorenzo Cain with the big hit, Ryan Braun with the big hit, Josh Hader with some incredible work out of the bullpen. Joaquin Soria, who has struggled at times, looked very good, as you mentioned, striking out Baez. I'm also struck by the guys who were sent down at some point this year and all contributed. And, I mean, Keon Broxton caught the last out, so to a lesser extent him, but Orlando Arcia with his first four-hit game of the year. What a time.
It was career.
What a time for your first four-hit game. And he was not struggling at the plate. Those were not flukes. I mean, they were singles, but, like, he definitely looked comfortable.
Since James Shields has effectively proved that the big game James moniker does not work for him, can we give that to Orlando Arcia now?
We definitely should.
Big game Orlando.
Recklessly give him the nod there.
I think that's the story. You know, as much as the Kane single and the Yelich hits and the Hader six outs and Chassin's start were magnificent, some of their biggest contributions, maybe their biggest in the biggest moments, came from guys that weren't on the team in August. Corey Knebel was scuffling badly. He couldn't get anyone out in August.
Right, and he's been dominant. 14 scoreless innings since he returned from his rehab start. I believe, what was it, pitcher of the week or reliever of the week?
Since the beginning of September of the month, he didn't allow a run in September. He's striking out 58% of batters since the beginning of September.
That is a hammer. I mean, that is a closer right there, a closer who's working the fifth or sixth or seventh, depending on when you need him.
I don't think Josh Hader's had a stretch like this this year where he's gone 16 innings or whatever without allowing a run, and he's not walking anyone, and he's just striking everyone out, which Hader does. But
he does give up home runs, too, and we're seeing Knebel, obviously, scoreless stretch. And it's a small sample, but unquestionably the guy is going to be one of the biggest parts of the Brewers postseason.
And we'll see if it carries over into the postseason. But for the past month, he's been completely unhittable with that fastball. It's been untouchable in 97, 98. And then the curveball has just been so sharp, and he's starting batters off with it. He started his seventh inning off with it yesterday, and you just know he's on when he drops that first pitch curve in.
Yeah, definitely. So Knebel, and NRC has been down a couple times this year, has really struggled to find it at times, and he comes through. And then Domingo Santana with a huge double. Santana really was a guy that everyone penciled in at the beginning of the year, being in that outfield. They get Kane and Yelich. Santana's status becomes very murky. Everyone thought he'd be traded. He struggled, lost his power, but he comes through with a monster double that set up the Brewers second and third with nobody out, followed by hits from Kane and then two batters later from Braun. The rare spot where Yelich doesn't come through. He struck out in his at-bat.
Everyone else did,
yeah,
besides Yelich.
And that still was the moment. 3-1, Brewers go up. They end up winning the game. What a time. What a time to be alive and to be a Brewers fan in Milwaukee.
Yes, it is.
Now we have to figure out, though, Kurt, who's going to be on the postseason roster?
Oh, man.
It's tough.
I do not envy the decision makers that have to decide upon this.
Let's discuss. First of all, we've been operating under the assumption, at least I have, that there is going to be a wild card roster, and been telling everybody, well, you know, the wild card, you're going to stack it differently because you don't need your entire rotation on that roster, because you can reset it after the wild card game for the division series. Well, there's no wild card game. The Brewers managed to skip that step. So now they go straight to the NLDS. They will have an opportunity to set their roster again if they advance to the championship series, and again after that if they want to advance to the World Series. So this is purely for these five games. It can be curtailed to the opponent to a degree. So, for example, I think you got to think, I mean, with the Cubs having as many lefties as they do, I think there's a chance Dan Jennings gets on the roster, even though I don't know if there's room for him, but that's one more left-handed pitcher and to face a team with a ton of lefties. In the Rockies, the Mountaineer, we've been talking about what you're going to do with Chase Anderson. That's probably not a good situation for Chase to come back. Home runs have been his bugaboo in a park that yields a ton of them. Two parks, because Miller Park is the other.
Maybe don't actively start a flyball pitcher in Coors.
Exactly. And the Brewers have a lot of flyball pitchers by design because their outfield is tremendous defensively, but that's probably just not the guy. And I'm really curious to know what happens to Chase Anderson. I don't know if he's a postseason guy. I think he could still do really well in the postseason. He could be your Randy Wolf, your veteran that comes through with a big outing, but it's really tricky. So why don't you go first? Or what are the big questions that you're looking at when you look at this roster?
The big questions. Well, I think if you put down the guys that you feel like are locks, I have 22.
Oh, wow. That's more than I had for locks.
That I feel very confident in being on the roster. Okay. A lot of that comes from the bullpen, and maybe it's not locks, but in my mind, I am saying that's someone that should be on.
Okay.
So if you're looking at the pitching, you've got your three starters. Your locks for starters are Chacín, Miley, and Gio Gonzalez.
Okay. And I wasn't sure if they would go with a fourth starter.
That's a big question.
We'll talk about that.
Yes.
And what about the bullpen?
You've got Hader. You've got Jeffress, who is available.
Yes.
After a bit of a confusion there.
That was
but he's
weird.
Fine. Knebel Soria. I've got Xavier Cedeño.
Me as well.
You got to have the loogie.
You're going to have
the
lefty guy.
He is their guy. It does not appear to be Dan Jennings.
He's about the only guy who really did not show well at all in that game against the Cubs.
Yes.
But he will be.
He's been overall.
He's been good.
Relatively consistent. Corbin Burnes has far secured his spot. And then I've got Brandon Woodruff.
Okay.
Just the fact that I'm confident enough in him to put him in the bullpen for the playoffs. He can give you innings if you get down. He can also pitch. He's pitched high leverage down the stretch out of the bullpen. He throws hard. And the fact that he was warming up in the eighth in a tie game in that wild or the tiebreaker game shows that to me that's a guy that he's in the back end of their bullpen and they want him in the playoffs.
That's a really good observation to have. You're right. He was in that big spot where we were all wondering, why isn't Jeremy Jeffress the guy warming up?
He would come in if it was tied, it appears.
Yeah, and so that it does seem to suggest that the Brewers are choosing Woodruff over Taylor Williams. Now, it's a little tricky because they would have had to have been saving some arms or thinking about that Tuesday game. So maybe Taylor Williams is one of those guys they just don't bring in. But they used a lot. I mean, they used Knebel, Soria, Hader. I mean, they were emptying their pen. So I got to think they wouldn't have chosen the lesser of two options in their mind. So you're right. I think
is Taylor Williams one of your locks?
He's the last guy on my list. But honestly, I can't consider him a lock. I would have stopped at Burnes. I'd go Hader, Jeffress,
okay.
Knebel, Soria, Cedeño, Burnes. Six guys that are locks. Obviously, there will be a couple more.
Right.
At least one more, maybe two. I don't know what happens there. I think Woodruff, for me, was on the outside looking in, but I like what you're saying about that. I think I would put him in as my seventh guy. And then it's about if you go an eighth guy, which, first of all, you could do if you only have the three starters. Is it Gira, Junior Gira, who is capable of working multiple innings and has looked very good out of the pen and offers a pitch that nobody else has? Is it Freddie Peralta.
Willie Peralta was actually good this year.
He was, yes, I know. We could talk about that another time. Freddie Peralta, who could obviously go multiple innings, I don't think it would be him. Is it Dan Jennings, because you wind up wanting another lefty out of the pen? I think Gira is good enough against lefties that you would choose that option because he could. You don't think so? Do I have that wrong?
No, I was looking at Willie Peralta's stats. That was my face.
Why were you looking at Willie Peralta's stats? Yeah. So I think that's probably it. On the outside looking in, I would have Jacob Barnes, Jordan Lyles, Matt Albers, probably Freddie Peralta. Those are guys that I don't think would make it. I don't think Chase Anderson will make it, and I think you're probably right that Davies is on the outside looking in, and they treat Gira, if they need a fourth, quote-unquote, fourth starter, that would be Gira.
Right. So the way I have the roster right now, there's three spots open.
Okay.
And that's with that's currently with 12 locks on the bench
okay.
as hitters. And I think, I don't know if, tell me if you think any of these guys won't make it. Pena, Kratz, Aguilar, Scope, Perez, Arcia, Shaw, Moustakas, Braun, Granderson, Kane, Yelich.
I think there's a possibility that one of those infielders doesn't make it. I do not know which one. I think it would have to be Scope, which I don't think they're going to
do.
Yeah,
and I think he likes – Council likes mixing and matching his lineups in that middle infield so much.
Honestly, Hernan Perez is probably your least valuable bat. Arcia is not a valuable bat, but Arcia is going to make it because he's defensive.
Right, because what Perez gives you is he's a valuable player over the course of 162 games where he can play – 7 different positions, but
right.
when you're in a playoff series where you maybe don't need him to play all those positions,
right?
Especially if Arcia's hitting, but I think he'll make the roster because they do like him.
And he's been on this team all year long. So you're right. I do think that's your infield and your catching situation and your outfielders. You said Granderson, right? You
have yes, him as Granderson is a lock.
Yep,
yes.
yep. So that would leave he's guys like Eric Thames, Tyler Saladino, Jacob Nottingham on the outside. No real surprises there.
Yep.
Keon Broxton and Domingo Santana then are jockeying for what I think is the last spot
right.
on the roster.
So I've got Thames, Santana, and Broxton for that 13th bench spot.
Okay.
I don't see a world in which they carry 14 hitters and 11 pitchers,
yeah,
especially
I don't either.
With the fact that their starters don't want length out of their starters.
No.
They want to go to their bullpen. So if you carry 12 pitchers, 13 hitters, then you've got one spot for Thames, Santana, or Broxton. I would go Santana.
Yeah,
his
and
bat has been
I would go Broxton because it gives you just such reliable outfield defense, speed if you wanted as a pinch runner, and then as a bat, yeah, he's really struggled this year. I personally don't think of him as bad as his numbers are. I think he's better than his numbers, but Santana has been so Johnny on the spot as a pinch hitter, and that's an asset you really go to in the postseason. That's something that you would need more than a runner, a pinch runner.
Right, and I think the value you would get from a high leverage pinch hit is more than what you expect to get out of a pinch runner.
Right. Right.
Who is not certain to score, and you're probably lifting like an Aguilar, one of your best bats, to put Broxton on the bases, and if you know the guy hits a homer after him, then it's
right.
There was no need for the pinch runner. So
let's review. In the outfield, you've got Yelich, Kane, and Braun. Granderson, your fourth. Santana, let's say, is the fifth.
Yes.
The three.
Except
six,
you won't see the field.
No. The six infielders would be Aguilar, Moustakas, and Shaw. Mm-hmm. Perez, Scope, and Arcia. That's 11. Two catchers, Kratz and Pena. Those are easy. That's 13. You keep three starters. That's Chacin, Miley, Gonzalez. You're up to 16.
Yes.
Relievers, we've got Hader, Jeffress, Knebel, Soria, Cedeno, and Burns. That brings us to 22. And then it's about those last couple pitching spots unless they want to carry one more bat. This is where we think Gira. I think you thought Taylor Williams, right? In addition to Brandon Woodruff,
I don't
is Taylor
know,
on the
I don't know about
in?
Taylor Williams for me. So I haven't come up with my final guys yet because I think you're gonna need a fourth starter. They're not gonna just pitch those three, I don't think.
Right.
Unless they go to a bullpen day.
Right.
Or does
so
Peralta
Davies
get, like,
is one of those guys. Davies and then Gira, and that
right.
might be it.
Do you pitch Davies or Chase Anderson? Probably Davies, from what they've shown.
They, yeah, I don't know
if they haven't shown enough faith to give Chase. You know, either of those two starts over the final week, are they going to pitch him, game four or
whatever. Yeah, I don't know. But, I mean, you could even go to Woodruff. If you're looking at a bullpen game, you could have Woodruff try to go two innings.
Woodruff and Burns to...
Yeah, I think if you... I think Anderson gives you a better opportunity to work deeper into a game. Like, Anderson, you could legitimately get five innings out of pretty confidently. I'm not sure they would feel that way with Zach Davies. But yeah. I honestly don't know.
But they don't need to get the, five innings. I don't know if they want to.
In which case, who do you want to go with? Do you want to go with the more veteran guy in Chase Anderson, who has shown a capability? I don't know. That's a really tough
call.
That
is not our call.
Not our call. Thank goodness.
So, those last two pitcher spots for me, I'm not even going to try to guess. But if I had to choose, I would go Guerra, Junior Guerra.
Uh-huh.
You got length, and his splitter makes him effectively a loogie if you need him in that spot.
Yes.
Thank you to Mike Schiltz for pinch hitting Matt Adams in
the first game
of that series.
Weird call. Didn't look at the stats.
And
all right.
I don't know. I don't know who my last
It's going to be interesting. We're going to find that out here in a couple days, probably as late as Wednesday night or even Thursday morning, what the situation is going to be. All right, now let's transition into looking at the 2018 season as a whole. It is officially a wrap. The Brewers, as we mentioned, have won 96 games, took 163 games to do it. There are so many magic moments from this season. It is impossible to put them into a list of just a few, but we're going to try. We're going to do our starting nine. We're going to do it like a draft, like a fantasy baseball draft, where you take your favorite moment.
I'm good at those, by the way.
You are a very successful fantasy drafter. You take your favorite moment. I'll take my first choice. We'll go back and forth. Or should we do snake draft style? Should I do 2-3 and then you do 4?
Yeah, we should do snake draft.
All right, snake draft. It's only fair. To get our starting nine, that's what we're going to do. So Kurt Hogue, the master of fantasy draft, whatever art we call that, the art of fantasy drafting, tell me what your number one moment is from the 2018 regular season.
My number one moment, I don't know if I'm a prisoner of the moment because there were so many good points and moments and games this year for the Brewers, but I'm going with 163 against the Cubs when Josh Hader got Anthony Rizzo, who had delivered the Cubs' only run of the game, to fly out to right field, and Keon Broxton settled under it, and Jonathan Schoop, before Keon even gets to the ball, raises his arms, and you know the game is over, and they have won the division, and they celebrate in Wrigley, and it was like a college celebrating in that glorified walk-in closet of a visitor's clubhouse.
The dorm room of MLB clubhouse
reminded me very much of a party in a college basement where it's hot and sweaty and it's crowded and no one knows what's going
really
on
bad.
And there's just liquid everywhere.
Yeah, that is a good call.
That's my top moment.
I mean, it was a good moment. I guess I was looking at it more from a macro sense. I mean, the Brewers should have won that game. I will remember that moment as, with the runner at first, you know, you see the swing, and the swing is an uppercut swing, and it looks, without knowing exactly where the ball is going, you're watching on TV, it looked like it could have been a home run, which would have tied the game. You hear if you look at footage of fans cheering in Milwaukee in bars, you hear that little like, oh, and then slowly they start to realize that
Keon
the outfielder
is under the ball.
Totally under it. I tell you what it reminded me of was 2008 when the Brewers had won the final game of the season and were waiting for the Mets Marlins, and that game ends on a deep fly ball to center that looked like it could have been a home run.
Who hit it?
Oh.
On the spot, come on.
Hold on. It's a Mets player.
Yes. Yeah, it was a Mets player.
Carlos Beltran?
Nope. He struck out at Wainwright the year before. I think it was
Tell me.
Ryan, take me to church.
Ryan Church, yes. Ryan Church with a deep fly ball. I feel like it's Cameron Maben who settles under it and catches it, but I don't know that for sure.
I don't know that.
If I'm right, I'm going to feel pretty proud of myself.
I'm going to go Amezga, Alfredo Amezga.
I don't think so. I don't know.
I could be right.
Okay, so that's your number one pick. Here's my number one pick. I'm going... I don't know. This may not be the number one for a lot of people, but that 13-12 game on August 29th where Christian Yelich hits for the cycle the first time, certainly emblematic of how we're going to remember the tail end of this season, is that we're going to picture Christian Yelich doing something. I mean, he had a big grand slam in the final stretch of the season. He had two home runs in a game for the first time. He hit for two cycles, a bases-clearing triple, two home runs in a big game in the final homestand. That was just an incredible game in that the Brewers – I mean, that was just a wild game. It was insane. 13-12, win in 10 innings. Jesus Aguilar hits the big home run.
Yeah. We could have drafted top 18 Christian Yelich moments.
Yes.
And left off, like, some very big hits.
Well, I think you could make 18 moments out of just that game, that 13-12 game. I mean, they even gave a run back in the bottom of the 10th on a home run. I mean, that was an insane game. So that's my number one, Kurt. Let me see. What do I have as my number two? I'm going to go with June 12th. There's a play against the Cubs, Base Running Magic by Lorenzo Cain and Christian Yelich. Again, emblematic of this season in that it involves the two key offseason acquisitions acquired basically an hour apart. And the fact that Lorenzo Cain mind-tricked the Cubs into avoiding a rundown. And I believe runs scored out of that play.
Yes,
that was a win for
them.
Yes, I mean, just incredible. That was an incredible moment and totally a mark of what makes Lorenzo Cain so valuable, his baseball smarts in addition to his obvious abilities, especially defensively but also offensively.
Yeah, Lorenzo Cain is actually good.
You love him. He's your MVP.
He is my MVP. Well, I actually don't know.
Ooh, you hedged.
I don't know.
That surprises me. I thought you were going to ride or die on that.
No, Christian Yelich this weekend, when I was at the game Saturday and he just did what he did, I just couldn't. I had to give in at that point. But then Monday's game with Lorenzo Cain getting the big hit made me go back to my previous beliefs. Okay, so for my second round pick, I am going to go with should we call this the Jordan Lyles game?
Oh, the Jordan Lyles game. That's an interesting call.
Except maybe the Jordan Lyles game gives me the image of that Cardinals game where he pitched the second inning.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
So
the Cardinals or Nationals? That might be Cardinals.
No, Cardinals.
I don't know.
I
it doesn't matter because this is the game where Jordan Lyles did his damage at the plate by
right.
not doing
both
any damage
of them,
at all.
Both of them, I believe it was back-to-back Friday nights. In which I was swamped with prep football stuff, hashtag content, hashtag brand. For the first one, I was sitting at a McDonald's trying to put a highlight video together, and people were freaking out on Twitter. And then for this one, people were freaking out as well because it was the 15th inning. It was like 1 a.m. And Jordan Lyles, after giving up two runs in the top half of the inning, I feel like it was a couple bleepers.
It was a blooper, two-out bloop.
Yeah, by Cervelli.
Yeah, it wasn't hard hit at all.
All of a sudden, Ryan Braun strikes out, and there's two outs, and I believe two batters on, and Jordan Lyles is all that's left. There's no one left to hit in the 15th inning, and here's this, and he walks, and it sets up Kratz for a game tying single, and then Orlando Arcia comes through with a walk off hit, and Jordan Lyles scores the winning run, and it's just this moment of what did that just happen?
Yeah,
the most improbable thing. Not by WPA, but by the fact that Jordan Lyles walked.
And then the Brewers were down by three runs with two outs at that point, or two runs.
Two
but
runs
still,
with two outs.
Eric Kratz and Orlando Arcia, two of the guys that
not
I think Brewers
hitters.
Fans would least want up
right.
in that situation. Kratz, it's a hard ball that just finds a spot to tie the game. And how important, we talked about this I think at the time, but if Arcia doesn't get that single, this is the 15th inning we're talking about. This is a 15-inning game with the Pirates. They were going to turn to Ulysses Chacin, the next day's starter, to pitch the rest of those innings. No guarantee you get the game. You burn your starter the next day. This is not a team thick with starting pitching. Like, they don't have a lot of options. Who knows what the dominoes would have been if that game – certainly, if they don't win that game, they don't get in – you know, they don't win the Central. But
right.
more than that, if you don't win the next few games, like, who knows where you end up? So it's that was just, like you said, the most improbable win of the season. I had given up on that game. Ryan Braun strikes out. I had no expectations. And Jordan Lyles, because they're out of pitchers and position players in this 15th inning, had to hit for himself and somehow draws a walk against the guy who just struck out Ryan Braun. And then the rest is history. Two more hits later, the Brewers have a ridiculous victory.
Incredible. For my number to lead off the third round, I'm going to take September 26th, the wild card clincher.
Uh-huh.
Felt just like a huge moment of relief. I mean, there was just, I guess we're picking moments, but I'm going to cheat a little because there are a few moments in this game. The fact that Adolis Garcia fell down. At that point, JR, I don't know about you, but it was like
destiny.
It felt like destiny that they were not only going to win that game and clinch at least a wild card spot, but they were going to win the division. Because the Cardinals are the team that always, they're the team that gets the run on a 50-foot chopper with a runner at first when Moustakas
right.
throws it away. They're not the team that has the runner fall down running third.
No, you're absolutely right. That was crazy.
And
that
then
was
for
Brewers
Jeffress,
devil magic right there.
Jeffress just takes care of business in the ninth, and it's this sense of relief that they're not going to choke this away.
There were a couple moments in this final week of the season. There was the falling down, and then the next night at Miller Park, or two nights later I guess that would be, where Nick Castellanos of the Tigers goes back for a home run ball and drops it over the fence, and that's the decisive run in the eighth. That's Ryan Braun's home run, and the Brewers win 6-5. Oh, you've got that on your
list. It's on my list. Oh, yes.
My apologies. How dare I skip ahead? I got to tell you, Kurt, that one's not on my list. So there's just too many moments.
That's a good moment.
Let's go to my three and four. I'm going to take my three is a walk-off home run early in the season by Jesus Aguilar. I'm going to go with the one, you know, I'm hedging here. I think I'm going to actually not do the one in April where he hits the 13th pitch for a home run. Oh. I think I'm going to do one in June 22nd, because wins against the Cardinals are pretty important in that they were able to put be able to separate themselves enough to eliminate the Cardinals from being a problem in the final week of the season. Jesus Aguilar hits two home runs June 22nd against Jack Flaherty. The first one comes in the seventh. That breaks up a no-hitter. The second one comes in the ninth as a walk-off home run, his second walk-off home run of the year. You know, you just got to mention how big I almost called him Jesus there. That was weird. I've never actually thought of him as Jesus. But how big Jesus Aguilar has been this year. Almost got to figure didn't make the team coming out of camp. We don't know how close, but it didn't make sense that they would keep him. And then he went on and had an MVP-like first half of the season. Mm-hmm. Absolutely carried this team at times. What a moment that was.
That was something else. He carried them that game. He carried them for much of the first half, too.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
My fourth one, all the way back to May 13th, that is Mother's Day. Mm-hmm. That is Freddy Peralta making his major league debut. He did not get through six innings, but he racked up, 13 strikeouts?
13 strikeouts and 5.2.
That's a rookie record, a rookie debut record in 5 2/3 innings, no less. He was flirting with a no-hitter for most of that stretch. And the best part of the story is that his parents were in town to see him pitch for the first time with AAA Colorado Springs. He was scratched from that start, got called up to the big leagues, pitched 2 days later, and his family, of course, because AAA is in Colorado and the Brewers were playing in Denver, they all got to see this in Coors Field. What a moment. Freddy Peralta, who obviously flashed some serious excitement. He was 21 when he made this debut, 22 as he ends the season. He's going to be a huge piece of the rotation and the Brewers going forward, and he comes through with a really memorable debut. Probably the best debut in Brewers history, if you count Steve Woodard, Steve Woodard. Probably on this side of Steve Woodard, it's the best debut.
It's going to be tough to top that performance. That was something else.
Eight innings of one hit ball against Toronto.
I had it way down on my list, and I now feel very bad
that you moved it so far down.
For doing that, because you just made me feel bad. So
I apologize.
It's like as a human being, from the human element to that. So thanks, JR.
Yeah.
Okay.
You're a bad person. That's how it is.
That's true. So I'm on the fourth now. Yes, the end of the fourth. I will take April 2nd.
Oh, early.
A lot of Cardinals games on here.
I was at this game. Can I just tell you, though, I wasn't there for the first inning and I wasn't there for the ninth, so I don't know if I really was at this game.
Is this a kids thing? Was this?
Yes. Well, it was also snowing on April 4th. Snowing
is
bad.
That is correct. Yes, that is correct.
Or April 2nd, what did you just say? It was a massive snowstorm. We were getting blown around the parking lot on our way in with two young children. It was quite the show.
Fun fact, I'm pretty sure that was the day I interviewed here for this for my job here, and then I arrived back in Minnesota where I was and then caught the end of this game.
Which we should actually talk about. We should actually talk about what happened in the game.
Yeah,
we haven't done that.
Things happened. So Chase Anderson, I believe, started that.
Yes.
And he gave up back-to-back homers to open the game. I got many angry tweets asking where this Ace Chanderson of mine was. And I said, just wait, he's coming.
He won the opener. What more do people want? He had his first game of the year.
He slammed his face on home plate,
too.
The first ever to do
that. He was giving up his face for the Brewers, guys.
So this is not a Chase Anderson hate podcast. This is a Chase Anderson appreciation podcast.
Yes.
And so they settled down eventually, stayed in the game, scored a couple runs in the bottom of the eighth to cut the lead to one. And then in the bottom of the ninth, with two outs and two strikes and nobody on, Christian Yelich, who we knew at the time was good, but this might have been the moment where we're like, oh my gosh, Christian Yelich hits a two-strike pitch out to right around the Toyota territory out in right center, ties the game. Ryan Braun, next at bat, first pitch against
Dominic Leone.
Goodbye, left field, walk-off home run, Gatorade shower, Brewers win. Game begins with back-to-back homers and ends with back-to-back homers. First time ever. Pretty cool.
First time in Major League history something like that happened. And I mean, props to Bernie for getting up on the slide again so fast so that he could go down a second time. I actually don't know if that happened, but I assume it did.
He knew it. He knew it was coming.
Yeah. I mean, Yelich to tie the game, like you said, a two-strike pitch. Crazy. And it didn't feel like at any point that the Brewers were going to win that game. It was a close game, but the Cardinals were kind of in control after the first two batters. And then Ryan Braun's walk-off, one of many walk-off home runs we've had this year. We've seen him from Aguilar. We've seen him from, Eric Thames had a walk-off. Braun, of course. It's just there have been a lot of fun moments this year, and that was certainly one to kick off the year on a good note.
Yes, so my fifth, the Rocky series in May Colorado, very good one. Just a couple, 2 days before the Freddy Peralta game, the Brewers trailed 9-3. Now, 9-3, it feels like you're out of the game, but in Colorado, you're never truly out of the game.
True.
They rallied back, cut the lead to 9-7, entering the ninth inning against Wade Davis, whom or who? whichever.
It depends what comes next in your sentence, I have to say.
That's true. Hernan Perez was apparently rattling, trying to rattle him from the dugout, saying, do you remember us? Yeah, you remember us, because last time they faced him, Travis Shaw had a walk-off homer against him.
That's right.
When he was with the Cubs. And so Hernan Perez then comes up with two outs and nobody on. Game's essentially over at this point. But Hernan Perez extends it with a single. Then Manny Pena, who has some pop but doesn't flash it very often, ties the game, two outs, hits a home run. He's pumped up, and then in extra innings, Travis Shaw hits the go-ahead base hit. The Brewers hang on to improbably win a game in which they trailed 9-3. So that was a pretty exciting game.
If you go by WPA, which is a statistic that sort of keeps track of, like, likelihood of victory, this was the least likely win of the year, even more so than that Pirates game we talked about, which felt like the least likely game of the year. It doesn't keep track of who's batting at the time. But, I mean, I would say Manny Pena for a game-tying home run is not the likeliest of outcomes, especially because Pena has struggled. He hadn't to that point in the season, but, you know, he wasn't what he was last year offensively. And I don't think anybody could have seen that coming, just a tremendous crazy win that will get forgotten because it happened in May, but it was actually the craziest of the year, maybe. Okay, so I've got two more. I've got my fifth and sixth round pick. Number five, we got to go back to the Christian Yelich well, and no, I'm not going to talk about the second cycle, but I could be here. There was a home run he hit in this last week of the season on Friday night. He comes back. He's penned this piece in the Players Tribune, basically a love letter to the city of Milwaukee. Everybody is picking up on it. Everybody's really into Christian Yelich. He's sort of a phenomenon. He comes back. He homers on the first pitch he sees back at Miller Park for the final series of the year. People chanting MVP. Hits an absolute bomb to center. And then he ends up, the Brewers end up beating the Tigers by a run. That felt like a playoff moment. The crowd was so engaged. They were so into it. It felt completely like playoff baseball had arrived in Milwaukee. We knew the Brewers were going to the playoffs at that point, but that was a pretty special moment, a great capstone, and he'd go on to hit two home runs the next night. It wasn't probably even his best game of the weekend, but it felt like a big moment all the same.
Yes, it was. That was crazy.
And then my next round, we're going to go, well, we got to go back in time a little bit here, I would think. Where did I put that? Here we go. We're going to go back in time, but actually not further than early September. Jonathan Scope, his big grand slam against Madison Bumgarner, one batter after he intentionally hits Ryan Braun. It's not clearly intentional, I guess, because they didn't admit to it.
But how many pitchers have ever admitted to intentionally hitting a batter?
And Madison Bumgarner is one to do these sorts of things. He beams Ryan Braun. Brewers have the bases loaded. Jonathan Scope hits a grand slam. Go-ahead grand slam, I believe, at that point.
Yep.
And Brewers wind up beating the Giants on a Sunday day game, I think.
Yes.
And just an incredible one of those moments, very reminiscent of Jonathan Lucroy a few years ago, where Kirk Gibson employed a similar strategy, and then and Lucroy, I think one batter later, hits a big grand slam. Just a moment in time where it's like, A, destiny is on the Brewers' side, and B, serves you right, Madison Bumgarner. That was a good time.
A little poetic justice. The kickoff of Scope-tember.
Scope-tember.
Which didn't actually happen because he had like a 42 WRC plus.
It was a light
that month.
Scope-tember.
Yeah.
He has come up with some major home runs. He had a big home run, I think, in that 13-12 game. He's had a couple good hits, but this is why we have to talk about him as maybe not making the postseason roster.
Scope-tember wasn't the best, but Ox-Scoper.
Ox-Scoper could still happen. Oh my gosh, Ox-Scoper. Is that okay? We'll workshop it. We'll see.
I'm gonna move on now. So we're in what, the sixth?
Yep. You got six and
or
seven.
Number six pick. Well, you skipped over cycle number two, so I will take cycle number two.
Okay, tell me about it.
Well, Christian Yelich, in case you missed it,
I didn't.
Hit for a second cycle within a month against the same baseball team.
That's amazing.
The Brewers won the game 8-0. He hit for a single, a double, a triple, and a home run.
That's true. Capped it with a triple, right? Both cycles ended with a triple, which is very high
and
degree
then,
of difficulty.
Maybe the best part was after the game is Christian Yelich refuses to take any credit for anything, and that's maybe like the best part about him.
Yes.
Is he's crediting Curtis Granderson from scoring from first so that he could get his triple on the play instead of being thrown out at home because then the inning would have been over and it would have been a double. It's like, oh, Christian Yelich.
Yeah, he definitely, this is sort of all in the aftermath of the big hubbub over the fact that he rested. He did not start a game against the Cubs in this Cubs series. The Brewers ended up winning 2-3 against the Cubs, but not the final day. A lot of uproar, needless uproar, and this is all in the aftermath of that. He just absolutely caught fire. Two cycles, like you said, same team.
No one's ever done it against the same team twice in a year.
Right. I mean,
like three people have done it twice in a year.
So there's some history. Another historical note with the game beginning and ending with back-to-back home runs.
Yep.
Brewers are making history left and right this year. What a moment.
So for my seventh moment, I'm going to take Ryan Braun forever.
Ryan Braun.
Second game of the year against the Padres. The Brewers trailed 6-3 going into the ninth inning against Brad Hand, who's a good closer. They rally for two runs, and then there's two strikes and two men on, down 6-5 for Ryan Braun. And he just delivered a very Ryan Braun moment. Fastball up in the zone. It felt like he knew it was coming because that's a tough pitch to hit, and he just clubbed it out to a deep part of the ballpark at a tough place to hit it. Home runs gives the Brewers an 8-6 lead, and it's just one of those Ryan Braun moments that you remember.
It wasn't even a game I finished watching. Since San Diego on the West Coast, I was tired. I chalked it up to a loss, and it was early in the season. And if it had been July or September, you know, like August, I would have definitely been staying up. But I fell asleep, didn't see it. Checked Twitter when I woke up, could not believe it. Like you said, I mean, they found the way off the deck so many times this year, and even not necessarily as dramatic as that, but so many moments where they were up facing a team's bullpen and they just had a lot of confidence. They mash the ball, especially post July 31st deadline when they added Moustakas and Scope and then ultimately added Granderson as well. Like, they are just a very confident offensive team. It's pretty nice to see. What do you got up next?
That was my two.
I'm up. I got pick 7 and 8 here.
Yeah.
We're winding down toward the end. I mentioned it earlier. My seventh selection here will be Jesus Aguilar's walk-off home run against the Florida, or I should say Miami Marlins. 13 pitches. Manny Pena had a 13-pitch home run later in the year, as it turns out. But Aguilar's walk-off winner, that was early in the season, in a series where the Brewers swept all four games against the Marlins. Actually, the previous game had come against Trevor Richards, the starting pitcher, who had worked at Miller Coors just a year before, which I thought was kind of a fun story. But Aguilar's walk-off winner gives the team a pretty uplifting victory. That was, I think, the third of the four games in the series.
Hashtag Jesus walks.
Hashtag Jesus walks it off. Very good. Yes, we love our Kanye on this podcast. We're a Kanye supporting podcast. Is that right?
Are we? I don't know.
That's a very dangerous thing to say now.
Yeah, we support the Jesus walks hashtag.
Yeah,
and the Jesus rakes hashtag.
Yeah, Kanye, we lost you there.
Yeah, that was part of. I forgot about this. That was part of 8 straight wins by the Brewers. They've won 8 straight games twice this year.
Yeah.
I remember that.
One at the end of the year that we'll all remember, and then once early in the year, that included a trip to Kansas City when Lokane hit a home run against his former team.
Didn't make the list.
Did not make the list. Yeah, that's certainly one to mention. All right, this one, I feel like I'm getting a steal here with my 8th pick, the Hater 8.
I knew you were going to take it.
The Hater 8.
I wanted that one.
Not Haterade. This is the Hater 8. This is back on April 30th against the Reds. Josh Hader was already starting to get some national notoriety, but when he struck out 8 of 9 dudes, retiring all 9 of them to cap a 3-inning save against the Cincinnati Reds. Also, I believe that had never been done before, a pitcher going 3 innings and striking out 8 batters in a 3-inning stretch. And, an outing of
all of his 8 outs being 8 strikeouts or something like
that. Total dominance from Hader this year. And, yeah, he had some hiccups. He had 6 strikeouts against 6 batters against the Cubs later in the year. I mean, there was definitely some times where Josh Hader was a weapon of mass destruction. That was the case on Monday in Game 163. He was tough to hit. And the moment I think we'll all take away from the Josh Hader season, well, honestly, the moment will be the All-Star game and the surfacing of old tweets that sort of put a damper on the Hader experience this year. But early in the year, April 30th, his 8 of 9 was just something, a spectacle to behold. You're up, man.
I'm up with my 8th pick, and I alluded to this earlier. Ryan Braun, again, this is a...
You love Ryan Braun.
Apparently a Ryan Braun moment podcast.
Yeah, August 11th, I'm guessing, right?
What was that?
His massive catch against the Braves to save a game?
Oh, no.
Not on the list.
A very good moment, though. Very,
yes, not on
very
the list.
Very good moment. A season-saving... He said something to the fact after the game that win...
Could have saved their season.
Saved their season, and then Craig Counsell shrugged it off. But I think in the back of everyone's mind, I was like,
Yeah, probably.
Things were falling apart.
Yes, that was a very... that was a malaise for the Brewers, for
good
sure.
Good book by Chinua Achebe, Things Fall Apart.
What do you got then? What round moment?
10 years to the date.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Of his 2008 homer against the Cubs. Bottom of the 8th, same inning, same situation, tie game. The Brewers need a win at this point against the Cubs. Or no, against the Tigers. I'm all over the place. But Braun comes up after Hader gives up the lead, and he hits a liner off the glove of Nicholas Castellanos. Rolls on the top of the fence and then falls into the picnic area. As Bob Uecker mentions, people were eating their snacks and encountered a baseball to give the Brewers the lead. They win the game. Jeffers holds on. Just crazy the fact that it was 10 years to the date of probably his biggest homer ever, that he comes through in a very similar situation to give the Brewers a must-win win.
That was two homers that day for Braun. And he said after the game he was locked in. He was healthy and he's feeling really good. He actually struggled the next 2 days to close out the series. Yes. But a healthy Ryan Braun, when he's swinging like he is there or like he was in the game on Monday where he had the big RBI single, that's a weapon that the Brewers haven't necessarily had all year. Just one more masher in a lineup full of them. That's pretty great. Right.
So for my ninth, now this is the tough part because this is where I like actually have to actively leave ones off that I really like. And so I'm gonna cheat and I'm gonna leave some off that I say some of the ones that I'm leaving off that I want to include.
Okay.
Eric Thames hitting a triple then scoring a run when Moustakas got beamed by a pickoff throw to
That's
give
right.
And that was a huge, it felt like such a big win for the Brewers against the Cardinals last week.
That Monday game was as big. I know you like the clinching game, but that Monday game was monstrous because you knew that they were going to emerge from that series with a one game lead.
Worst
and
case.
And they went down in that game and there was a rain delay. That was a big play. You're right
that
about
was a,
that.
That was a very, and the fact that Eric Thames had a triple. Yelich is, you mentioned the homer last Friday. The homer on Saturday, just as big. He hit two homers in the game. Mm-hmm. One of them jump started the offense when it looked like, oh, what is his name? Daniel Norris. Was going to own them. And then he hit an absolute laser beam in the seventh inning with the crowd going crazy already again to give them the lead.
We should have just said Christian Yelich the last series of the year because there was a lot there. Yeah.
Opening day when Jeremy Jeffers had an escape act and then G-Man Choi and Orlando Arcia deliver the game-winning hits. And then also the L flag game.
Yes, 11-1, the Cubs lose to the Brewers.
This huge flag. That was funny. But I'm going to go with my last one. September 3rd, the beginning of the Brewers' run.
Labor Day.
Yes. Christian Yelich hits a walk-off infield single.
Fielder's choice.
That's correct, yes.
So Chris Bryant at third, who stepped on third and couldn't get him.
Yes, and then Christian Yelich with his speed beats out the throw to first to give the Brewers the win. They trailed going into the bottom of the eighth. Joe Maddon and Carl Edwards Jr. got ejected for arguing balls and strikes.
Mm-hmm.
Josh Hader gave up the lead
to Anthony Rizzo
in the top of the eighth on a home run.
Flashback to yesterday where Anthony Rizzo hit what looked like could have been a game-tying home
run.
Those
two had so many dramatic moments, just Hader and Rizzo this year. But then the Brewers rally against Jesse Chavez, who the rest of the year did well against them, but the Brewers have some history against him.
Yeah.
They rallied against him. Christian Yelich gets this walk-off single. The Brewers were down five, or walk-off fielder's choice. The Brewers were down five games in the division entering play that day. It was essentially a must-win. We weren't even really considering winning the division.
Right, not at that point.
The team was going to win the division at that point. But it turned out to be a very big game.
And Christian Yelich's speed coming into play there. And, of course, that game will be remembered for what Cole Hamill said afterwards, talking about the Cubs' rivalry, the nature of the rivalry, which certainly ramped things up and played nicely into the hands of the Brewers when they got toward the end of the season and wound up winning the division anyway. Very interesting moment. I've got one more pick, so here are the ones I'm going to leave off. I'm not going to mention the Keon Broxton game, June 29th.
Loved the Keon Broxton game.
I mean, the dude did everything.
There's
also
another Keon Broxton game where he robbed the homer.
That's true, so that's also on my list. Keon Broxton with a game-saving homer against the Twins. In this particular game, he hit two home runs himself, made a diving catch, a great base running play to get out of a jam himself, a pickle, ended up scoring the run, just did a lot in that game. He had been struggling, not struggling, but he wasn't tearing up AAA. He'd been sent down at the beginning of the year and had worked his way back. The Brewers had some injuries, needed a guy, and Keon had a huge one. July 4th, Nate Orff hits a home run, the little man that could. He was sort of the emblematic, you know, the everyman in the minor leagues. Obviously very talented, had a great career in the Brewers minor leagues, but hadn't gotten a chance, finally gets his chance, hits a home run, gets carried on, put on the shoulders of a couple players. That was pretty fun. July 31st, Lorenzo Cain hits the home run and steals a home run himself in a 1-0 win in L.A. Brewers took the first 2-4 in L.A. That's when it felt like, man, they are a really good team because L.A.'s a good team. Brewers almost won the game the next night. They lost in extras, just a tremendously played 6-4 loss. And, you know, the Brewers looked really good at that point. Eric Thames' walk-off home run with two outs down a run in the ninth, August 3rd. Looked like that game was over.
That didn't even
cross your mind, right? And then
so
the Braun's run-saving catch against the Braves took only one of three in Atlanta, but needed that game especially. So my last pick, the one I am going to take, though, is May 8th. That's the Brent Suter game.
The Brent Suter game, yes.
Yes, he homers off reigning Cy Young champion Corey Kluber. hits a home run to dead center. Like, it was an obvious home run. It was incredible. They win the game 3-2. He makes an awesome defensive play in that game, too, where he dives to catch a bunt and then turns around from his, you know, backside, makes it a double play, gets a runner at second base. Brent Suter is so important to this team, and he gets hurt, so he doesn't get to contribute as much, but, like, as a sort of a presence, what a guy he is and how much fun he has. He is so important to the mentality of this team, as much fun as they have had. And that was a really phenomenal moment for Suter.
He didn't even start that game. That was the Wade Miley start.
That's right.
I believe it was Wade Miley's second start of the year.
Yeah, he was good in his first one.
And then a couple batters got on, then all of a sudden Wade Miley got hurt, and here comes Brent Suter. And it's like, oh, there's no chance in this game. Corey Kluber's pitching.
Right. This is bad. So
Brent Suter has to come in. He's not supposed to be pitching today. And they won.
3-2 in that game. Kluber did beat them in the rematch later, a couple weeks later, a week and a half later. But Brent Suter gets his moment. Really a bummer that Suter doesn't get to contribute to this postseason team because he is, you know, now rehabbing from Tommy John surgery. But he is still very much there, very much a presence to reckon with. I don't know if they let those players who aren't on the roster in the dugout.
I think they do. Okay. I think they have like the travel squad or something.
Okay.
I don't know if Suter will be on it.
Yeah, I don't know. They might need different guys who would have to fill in if somebody gets hurt or something. I don't know.
Well, you can't change it in the middle of the game.
I think you can if somebody is disabled. They have to be out for the rest of the postseason.
That's right.
But you could do that. Not that that's a
This is a push to bring Brent Suter.
Yes, we just want Brent Suter in our lives at a playoff game. The dude is a lot of fun. Hey, I hope you had a lot of fun listening to us rattle off these moments, looking back at the 2018 Brewers season. We will be back in touch as we with Tom and Todd to talk Brewers with the next week's podcast. Should be well into the division series at that point. We may know what the outcome is. That'll be after Game 3. Hopefully it's good news, or at least not finite news at that point, with a couple more games to go. And we will chat with you then. Kurt, thanks for joining me once again.
Thank you for having me, Jer.
All right,
a blast.
We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.